My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow. So as I said before, it's an honor to be the chairperson this year, and this has just been an amazing group of people, and I have learned a lot about myself and about a lot of you, and I love it. Maybe sometimes I don't like what I learned about myself, but I've got a program to work, thankfully. Tonight, we're going to just deal with a few housekeeping items before the end, because I think after Karen, speaks? After Karen's message tonight, I think we're probably all going to be on a spiritual high, and the last thing we're going to want to do is listen to housekeeping announcements. Who agrees?
Yay! Yay!
Okay. So, first of all, for the hotel, there's a 16% tax that we will have to pay to the Westin if we don't get enough copies of passports and tourist cards. So please, if you're staying at the hotel in particular, but we'll take a copy of everybody so you can be in the raffle tomorrow, take your passport, your tourist card, to the copier at the registration check-in desk tomorrow and make a copy. It'll save us 16%. And what that means is that SUS will have that 16% that we can then donate, okay? So it's for a good cause. Once again tonight, the back doors are not locked, but we don't want you to use them because they're loud. So if you will please use the side entrances over there when you're coming and going. In fact, if you have to go out one of those doors in the back, you won't be able to get back in because they lock automatically after you're out. Phones, I think, are already off. Thank you so much. We want to focus tonight on the message that Karen's speaker has for us. Tonight, we have the beach meetings, a meditation. Tomorrow morning, beach meetings, yoga. Tomorrow morning, we have the spirituality meeting. Tonight, the ice cream social. Yay. So anyway, stick around. And what I'm going to do now, and I think, Via? Housekeeping, another announcement. And that's regarding the deaf attendees we have here right now. What came out in the panel this morning is we want you to be able to hear the message. So it is being recorded, and we will have access on the website by a specific link for just the deaf to access it so that you can actually see and hear the message from Karen tonight. So it won't be for everyone. It will just be for this group, so if you will please make sure that we have your email address and we'll be in touch with you about how you can access the talk tonight. So anyway, I'm glad there's some solution for that. And right now I want to turn the program over to Dave, who was the chairperson here 2 years ago. He's a dear friend. We refer to him as, I think there's another housekeeping announcement. What? A black Jeep Liberty has their lights on. Is that what you said? Okay, so back to Happy Dave. Okay, so Dave is going to come up and do the countdown. We fondly refer to him as Happy Dave because he's always happy. He chaired this convention 2 years ago, and we love him dearly. So I'm going to turn it over to Dave.
Dave, happy alcoholic. Dave. It's great to be here and great to be sober. My home group is the Millside Group. It's in Coquitlam, British Columbia, just outside of Vancouver. And also, my other home group is the Serenity Group in Puerto Vallarta, where I spent 3 months. So, Anyways, I think I know a few of you people over the last 7 years, and it's very great. And what's so cool about this is I get to not just build on relationships from the past. I've also made many new relationships this year, and that is so special. Anyways, are we ready to count? Are you guys ready? Is there anybody? So what happens here, if you've never been to a countdown before, this is what we do back home, is we're going to tell you the year, and we're going to start from the top years and work our way down to the days. And we're going to ask you to please stand if you have that amount of years of sobriety. And as we get down, if there's a few people, please stay standing. So we have my counters. Are the counters in place? Yes, they are. And they can record the amount of years and time we have. And then we'll add it all up and we'll let Pat announce it at the end. And at the end, we're going to have the person with the most sobriety give away this big book that we signed to the person with the least amount of sobriety. Are we ready? Here we go. Is there anybody with 60 years? Anybody with between 55 and 60 years? 54, 53, 52, 51, 50 years. Forty-nine. 48, 47, 46, 45, yes, 44, oh, we got 44 in the back, 43, yes. 42. 41. 40 years. Yeah. Jerry G. 39. 38. Just keep in the back. 37. 36. 35 years. 34. 33, 32, 31. 30 years. 29. 28. 27. Keep counting until we see you. 26. 25 years. Twenty-one. 20 years. 19. 18. 17. 16. 15 years. 14. 13. 12. 11. 10 years.
I got with 10 years too.
9. 8.
Keep standing.
7. 6. 5 years. Let's keep standing so we can count you. 4. 3. Keep it standing, please. 2.
Here we go. Keep standing up.
1 year. He's got 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah. 11 months. Yeah. 10 months. Ah. 9 months. Hey, 9 months. Yeah. 8 months. Okay. 7 months? Six months?
Go, Ellie.
5 months. Four.
Some in the back.
3 months.
Yes.
Two months. All right, 1 month or 30 days.
Danielle.
29 days. 28. 27. 26, 25 days, 24, 23, 22, 21.
Oh, I got you, didn't I?
19, 18, 17 days.
Yes.
16 days, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10 days, 9, 8,
yes.
7 days, 6, 5 days, 4, 3, 2 days, 1 day, just for today.
1 day over here.
1 day.
What?
Have this gentleman here, please. Okay, Gary, will you please present our big buck to Jeff?
You know, as far as it goes, he's the most important one here in this room. You're going to hear things that you don't like, put it up on the shelf. One day it will come by and you'll say, hey, it's true.
All right, well, thank you so much for allowing me to be of service again at Sobriety Under the Sun. It's great seeing you all, and I look forward to the rest of this weekend. Do I flip the page? Oh, I flip a page. Now I'll continue. Please join me off a big... Oh, we did that. Now, Beth, where's Beth? Beth, well, we've opened our meeting with the preamble and the enemy statement of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. say your name. Anyway.
Just read
and
the
and just let us, yeah.
This?
You read this in the preamble?
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect.
And then this, and then it's next. That's
I read everything.
Yeah. Okay, thank
this
you.
And this, the two pages?
Yeah. You okay this. With that?
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Wow. Oh, like this, is it better? Better? Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Natalie. I'm an alcoholic from Ottawa, and I'm very happy to be with you tonight. You cannot hear me? Is it better like this? More? Okay. The two? Okay, like this? Okay, we will get it. So let's us have a moment of silence to reflect on the reason why we're here tonight, followed by the serenity prayer. May I have that moment, please? The serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The preamble. Alcoholic Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Anonymity statement. There may be some here who are not familiar with AA's 11th and 12th traditions of personal anonymity at the public level, which state that our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Also, please be considerate when taking photographs around the convention venue. Take care that you do not capture images of AA members and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in your pictures. Please remember that taking photos during AA meetings make many members uncomfortable and the confidentiality of the gathering. In keeping with this principle, please do not post recognizable photo of identifying AA members on website accessibility to the public, including unrestricted pages on social network sites. And whatever the medium, no disclosure of a member's affiliation with AA can rightfully be made by any but the individual himself or herself. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share or recover problem with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. Okay, so now, Becky, there's someone that will, could you please come up and read how it works? There's someone who has been assigned to read how it works. Becky, where is Becky? Oh, Becky is coming, yeah. So enjoy your meeting.
Hi, I am Becky, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is First Brew in Klamath Falls, Oregon. And I have the privilege of coming to Port of Arda for a couple of months every year, and I love it. So thank you all for welcoming me here. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely recover them, give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Breathe. Now I need to breathe. Okay, their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like.
Slow down just a smidge.
Oh. Okay.
Keep breathing.
Okay. One more time. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point is, they're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Hi, my name is Jason, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Serenity Group in Puerto Vallarta. These are the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Now I would like to introduce our speaker, Karen, from Housatonic MA, whatever that is, to share her experience, strength, and hope with us this evening.
Hello, Karen. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. I'm very happy to be here today. I'm from where? I am from At Wits End, Barrington. Great Barrington, Massachusetts. I've flown quite a ways to get here, thousands of miles to get here. Wow. How many of you flew over thousands of miles to get here? Or am I the only one? Wow, yay, that's awesome. This is the best conference. This has been wonderful so far. So I really want to thank all the people who volunteered hundreds and hundreds of hours to make this weekend happen. Thank you to the committee. And I wanted to say thank you to Tony for meeting me at the airport. That was amazing. I had my own host. That was so nice. Thank you to Tony. Many thanks. And thank you to VF. Thank you so much. My Lord, she works so hard. I don't even know all the people to thank, but I want to thank them all. And Pat also. My sober date. My sober date is April 18th, 2003. So my recovery, actually, I started in the rooms of Al-Anon. And I remember I was in there and I was listening. I was like, I think I'm in the wrong room. It's really nice to be part of the solution and not the problem. And I never thought that was going to be possible. So it's hard for me to remember exactly what to say, but right now I want to say, this is really a special event because I know the committee worked so hard to bring diversity to this conference. And I believe that diversity makes all of us better people, makes for a better place. And it's rare that we have the opportunity to meet other deaf people in recovery and to meet each other and chat and go to dinner together. So I want to thank you for making this happen and offering this diversity and hoping this will continue. It'll just for many more years to come. Bill W., he talked about that idea of becoming infected with sobriety. And he said that people are afraid of catching God. It's like catching that God thing, you know, becoming infected with sobriety. And I became infected with sobriety. I caught it. You guys are contagious. Recovery is contagious. That's why I like the idea of a new word that's becoming popular, recovery carriers. I like that idea, and I think Bill would have liked that term also. So where I started, I think this would be a good place to start with my story, where I grew up. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm a Midwest girl from Illinois, Missouri, Kentucky, Wisconsin. You know, I grew up in really sweet small towns, you know, less than 5,000 people. And where I grew up with the concept of normalcy. You know, my home was normal, which meant it was mostly white, straight, Christian, church-going folks. That they were normal people with Midwestern values. You know, it was important not to become too ruffled. You know, those kind of emotions of frustration, upset, you know, you had to push them down, push them away. People, you know, I remember, like, never hearing swears. I remember a strong value is to be a nice person. You know, I definitely internalized that. Also, normal means that you can hear. And I really thought that where I grew up, that represented everything possible. The idea of, you know, all human, animal life, you know, I thought anything that existed in that small town. I didn't really there was not a lot of diversity. I never met another deaf person. I didn't meet another deaf person until I was 21 years old. So that was my world. It's quite small. And I thought, if I can't figure out how to fit in there, that means I'm not going to be able to fit in anywhere. So my goal was to pass for normal. So imagine yourself a little girl. You know, not really understanding what's going on. And you notice everyone's a little bit different than you. They seem to be able to have conversations, and then they laugh at the right time, and I'm like, why am I not feeling like I fit in here? I must be broken. There's something wrong with me. So, and I thought, if I could hear, maybe people would like me better. So that was my goal. I have to figure out how to make it appear something to be something that I'm not. So can imagine, that's like the perfect storm for developing, for a budding alcoholic. So, but that's what happened to me. So it had never occurred to me that there was another place where there were adults who were deaf, people like me, and like us here. It never occurred to me that there was a language and a culture and a community that was beautiful and happy, and where I felt I could fit in. I didn't know about that, and really, it never occurred to me that I shouldn't just go ahead and try over and over to become somebody I really wasn't, to try to become normal. And I didn't realize how destructive that could be. It was like going down the rabbit hole. And I became really obsessed with that idea of becoming a normal person. I was very self-critical. I wanted to make sure that I passed. I looked like normal. I would beat myself up, you know, for any perceived failure. School was hard. I was picked on a lot. Kids made fun of me. You know, I missed what was going on, and the kids would tease me, and they'd say, oh, you talk funny. Oh, you're retarded. My teachers thought I was, you know, retarded. They labeled me as retarded back then. And then they labeled me deaf and dumb. So then my parents didn't want to send me to a deaf school once they realized I was deaf. And then my parents also became obsessed with their own idea of normalcy, and they hid mental illness, depression, alcoholism, and I even had a closeted gay father. So it wasn't until much later that I found out my father was actually gay. So there was a lot of hiding, there was a lot of denial, there was a lot of alcohol flowing in my family. So, you know, that became my life as well. I remember growing up, I thought, oh, it seemed like a good idea to also drink. I just came really good at, like, covering up and pretending and, you know, putting on that veneer that everything was fine. But inside, I had that hole. Something didn't feel right. You know, like I said, I was really good at it. I could pass. I never told anyone that I couldn't hear. There was a lot of denial going on, even with myself. My family couldn't even say the word deaf. They would say, you have a hearing loss. I lost my hearing. Okay, maybe I should look for it, and then I'll find it. Wow. So, I went to college. Nobody thought I would go to college. Nobody expected that, but I did. I got into college. But back then, there were no interpreters. There was no access. There was no special services. So really, I just started drinking. I started smoking a lot of weed, using other drugs. And I had to try to figure out, again, how to have, you know, that mask. You know, back in the day, these were days of, like, hippies. And, you know, people would say, wow, you read lips far out. And eventually, after college, for a long time, for a whole lifetime, really, after a lifetime of doing this, trying to look good, trying to put on this veneer, I really just fell apart. I was living in New York City. I met a guy. We traveled. And then we settled down in New York City. And that was the first place I ever met another deaf person, ever. I met the first deaf person, a deaf adult, when I was 21 years old. And wow, it was powerful for me. Because that person said to me, you are one of us. You're like me. And that was the beginning of that crack, that fissure, that opening. And and I started to become comfortable with who I am, just a little bit. But it wasn't enough to stop drinking or to stop the other behaviors. And I started to have, how shall I say, man issues. So, wow, yeah. Man issues. For me, what that meant is the more dysfunctional, the more, the uglier car you drove, the more you drank and drugged, oh, the more I loved you. Really. The men in my life were the kind of guys my friend would have said, eek, run for the hills, take off. But I'm like, oh, I think I can fix him. So codependency is a big part of my story. I think I'm gonna switch. So really, that part was sad, but really, what it was my need for love and acceptance, and I needed to feel lovable. And I was looking for love in places where there was no love. And people who were really sad, they were not capable of giving love. So it's sad. There are people who can't love. You know, they're narcissistic. They just don't have that ability. So at that time, I started taking on even more denial. And my own feelings about myself, I was kind of trying to, of oppression. And at that time, I married a man who was very attractive, very handsome, but he was also a very sick man, and he was a very abusive man, and he was not capable of loving. And I had three awesome kids, so I'm lucky to have that from that I received from that relationship. But, you know, the relationship and my experience in that just kept spiraling down.
And really, nobody knew. I was really able to cover it up and hide it really well. It was more like a double life. My professional life, I was working as a mental health counselor, if you can imagine that, an addiction counselor. So, and in my home life, domestic violence was occurring, anger, pain, and sadness, and they just were totally separate. You know, there are a lot of women who do that. I know I'm not the only one. And I thought, back then, I thought I was the only one. It's sad. Now it's time to talk about spiritual awakenings and spiritual moments for me, because that's where my life really changed. I had many spiritual awakenings, moments of spiritual reminders or a little tap on the shoulder. But you have to understand that I married a man, he was hearing, he wasn't deaf, and he denied every part of myself. That man didn't allow me to use sign language in my own home. So my hands were handcuffed, essentially, like they were tied up. A really good friend of mine, he came to me and said, "Karen, you are a battered woman." I was so thin. Oh God, I must have weighed around 110 pounds. Really thin as a rail. And my spirit was just dissolving. And he said to me, "You must get help. You have to do something." So I did. I really heard him, and I went to see a therapist, a regular counselor, And you know, the counselor was hearing, didn't know anything about deaf people, had never met a deaf person before, so he was asking me a lot of questions, and I had to educate my therapist about deafness. But she did help me to understand a little bit about codependency. I read a lot of books. Back in the 80s, codependency no more. But she never asked me about my drinking. Not one time. And I kept my mouth shut. I didn't say a word. I did not really get any better. Well, I kept doing the work. I did. I eventually got my own apartment after that. My three kids and I moved out. I kept my job, but then one day I just didn't go to work. I blew it off. I didn't call. No call, no show. I just stayed home and drank, smoked cigarettes. And then a coworker of mine, he stopped by my house and he said, what's going on? I'm worried about you. No one heard from you today. And I was like, hey, come on in. I was wasted. I was absolutely wasted. And the guy just was straight with me. That was another spiritual awakening. It was not warm and fuzzy. It was like hitting me over the head with a 2x4. He said, you do not have the luxury of screwing up your life. You have three kids depending on you. You are not indispensable. You can be fired from work. Well, that woke me up a little bit. Okay, then. Well, shit, I gotta clean up my act. I was trying to stop drinking by myself back then. I managed it for a little while. And nobody ever talked to me about AA or any other resources. I really didn't know. And even if I went to AA, what would I have done? How would I have joined the group? I'm really not good with groups, besides the fact that I can't hear. So I drank for a little while. Oh, and then I dumped out all of my vodka, my wine, dumped it all out. And then there's cracks started to open a little bit more. Denial was hard. It was hard to pretend. I was in bad shape. I was popping pills, drinking, and mixing the two of those. Blacking out, just blackout drunk. Wow. And not remembering a thing. I'm really lucky to be alive and not brain dead. My last drunk and my last blackout, I will never remember. I'll never forget waking up. It was Easter Sunday, and my kids were just horrified. The look on my children's faces, and they were pretty young, teenagers. And my oldest said, Mom, do you remember anything that happened last night? No, I did not remember a thing. It was really bad, trust me. It was really bad. And that was it. That was it. I knew I had to stop. It's really funny how you can try over and over again, but in that moment, I knew that was it. I've never touched a drink since. I called a friend of a friend who knew someone who was a friend of Bill W. and said, I need help. And back then, we used something called a TTY. I was typing kind of like a keyboard, and I called my friend. She responded, TTY, anyway, it's hard to explain. And I said, I think I need some help. I need to figure out how to stop drinking. And right away, that woman came over. she said, I'll be there tomorrow. I'll bring you to a meeting. And I was like, okay. And that woman called a preschool teacher who knew a little bit of sign language, could sign a little bit. And the preschool teacher, she interpreted my first meeting. She wasn't a great interpreter. She was not qualified, but I got it. I got enough to know that I was in, and I was in the right place. Wow, I mean, it's pretty emotional for me to think about that. You know, you always hear what you need to hear when you go in the rooms. And I will never forget the first time I said, hello, my name's Karen, I'm an alcoholic, and I just started crying, sobbing. And it was a speaker meeting, and I was stunned. The woman who was speaking was a victim advocate that had helped me file my restraining order against my ex-husband. Wow, I mean, I had no idea she was part of the program. And her story was my story, full of domestic violence, drinking, love addiction, relationship issues, relationship addiction, just the whole gambit, everything. I identified with her. I heard my story from her, and I heard hope. I knew I was not alone. And that was the biggest thing about this program. Look at us. We're not alone. So so I started to heal. I started to feel better. And that woman who picked me up became my sponsor. She told me, I will be your sponsor. And I said, okay, I guess you're going to be my sponsor. She had never worked with a deaf person before. She knew a little bit of sign language because she met some deaf kids in Africa when she was volunteering there. So I said, okay. And once again, it was almost like my therapist. I had to teach my sponsor how to work with me. She would say things like, okay, so I want you to go to a meeting, and you'll sit in the front row, and you will lip read the speaker. And I looked at her, I said, hell no. That will never work. I said, come on, you sit with me, and you put in some heavy-duty earplugs. You sit next to me, and then you read the lips with me too. Read the lips of the speaker. She told me to stop being a wise guy. But I meant it. I was so traumatized from growing up and faking it, trying to pass and pretend as if I understood everything that was happening. And I couldn't fake it anymore. I would go to a meeting. I couldn't go to a meeting and just paste a smile on my face and pretend like I was understanding. I would probably drink again. I'd probably relapse if I tried that. I just told her I can't do it. So, the 12-step meetings and treatment programs are just not accessible for deaf people in Massachusetts. And in fact, in most of the country, there are no access for deaf people in those meetings and treatment programs. And I said to myself, I know this is where I have to be, so I have to figure out how to get there. I have to figure out how to get interpreters, how to get support. Well, I started looking around, trying. I found a retired teacher of the deaf who used to teach deaf children. She was wonderful, very sweet. Between her and the preschool teacher and the retired teacher who used to teach deaf children, I thought I could probably go to one meeting a week between the two of them. That was not enough. I was pretty desperate. I got my 14-year-old daughter to start interpreting for me. Yeah, 14 years old. Wow. when I look back on that, she was very innocent and just very willing as well. But she was hearing some pretty adult things, some pretty adult war stories. And she would look around the room and say, "Mom, that's my math teacher." I said, "Shh, you can't say, tell anybody." But really, God, the math teacher, the high school principal, the doctor, the lawyers, they were all in the room. And my daughter was shocked. She said, "Well, hey." But you know, there's always opportunities for growth and opportunities to learn something. And my daughter learned about confidentiality, anonymity, boundaries. She heard the stories. And she was a teenager. And she learned that most people started their stories and say, "I started drinking when I was 12. Or I started drinking when I was in high school." So it's almost like a prevention education class in AA for my teenage daughter. It was pretty cool, but people accepted it. They trusted her, but I knew I couldn't keep that up. My daughter. My daughter can't interpret for me. That didn't feel right. She was a teenager. So I talked to the people in the rooms. I started asking them where I could find interpreters, where I could find funding for interpreters. It started to become my own advocate for my own recovery. And because there was no one else that was gonna do it for me, I had to do it for myself. There was no system in place. I went to my home group and I sat in the meetings with my sponsor, and she was just enunciating, saying, "Read my lips," like that. I would ask questions like, she would ask me questions like, "Are deaf people alcoholics and addicts? Are there a lot, are deaf people are addicts, really?" I said, she asked me, "Do deaf people drive cars?" Yes. Newsflash, we do. And the most important question was, where are the deaf people? I don't see the deaf people coming to AA meetings. Well, I said, "You do not look for water in the desert." And that was it. There's nothing for us here. And I had to make that happen. But I developed a lot of friendships and a lot of support. But there was a lot of resistance, too. It was a two-way street. Some people said, "Well, we're not responsible. We're not a social service agency. But we are responsible," as it says behind me. It was an interesting time in my life. My sponsor and I went back and forth. And she finally stopped picking on me. Well, she would say things that made a lot of sense. Like, "Well, Karen, you didn't have any problems ordering your own drinks. Why do you need an interpreter you didn't need an interpreter then. Why do you need it now? You didn't need an interpreter to buy your alcohol." Well, that's a good point, but not quite the same. So, so I got involved. I would call it a grassroots movement in Massachusetts at the time. So getting all the deaf people together in a group. And we started to meet and talk about what we needed and what we needed to make AA and treatment programs accessible. And we got it. We went up the ladder. We talked to state agencies. And we finally convinced the Department of Public Health to fund an interpreter for Massachusetts. So now Massachusetts has state funding for interpreters for meetings and treatment programs. That's really wonderful. So you have to speak up. You cannot be quiet. We had to help AA as a program understand that interpreters are certified. That means they have training, professional training, in ethical codes, which include confidentiality. What they're seeing, what they're hearing, stays with them. Because some people were concerned maybe interpreters should be members of AA in order to interpret the meetings. And I said, I was explaining, you're safe because interpreters themselves have the code of ethics. So over time, we got it. A little bit of pushback about accepting outside funding, but I think, and want to add that the GSO has the pamphlets that they say it's okay to accept funding for interpreters. So try to get that in your states as well, maybe. I don't know if you knew about that. So, becoming an advocate, activist, I started to reach out to other deaf people. And I started to see all the gaps and what was missing, what was needed. So we need support. There's no access to counselors, to treatment. So I started a deaf recovery coach organization. And it's the first deaf recovery coach organization in the world, I think. There hasn't been one before. And that's been amazing to have. Because, you know, one thing that AA does is it opens the door and welcomes you to life. And how can we make AA welcoming for deaf people? And part of it is that you have a companion, you have support, someone you can talk to, and sponsorship. It's an important part. It's important to understand that ASL itself is a completely different language than English. So reading the big book, reading the 12 steps, many deaf people do not have that ability. I'm one of the lucky ones. I grew up with a family that really put an emphasis on education and English included in that. My dad did a great job and gave that to me, but not all deaf people have that. So the most powerful thing about this organization is that you're not alone. You have to have the connection. And that's really what's happening here right now with my fellow deaf people, with all of us. So something kind of similar to this happens every year in Massachusetts called Sober in the Sun. It's a camping event where people get together. Thousands of people go to it. And we got interpreters. And maybe between 15 and 20 deaf people would go. And we'd go camping together, have our own AA meetings, have interpreters for the public AA meetings, have workshops. Kayaking, swimming, everything. And every night, the deaf people would sit around in a circle around the fireplace and chat and have a meeting in ASL. Because, you know, the circle is really an important thing for deaf people. Hearing people sit in rows like this. But if you go to a deaf meeting, we sit in circles. Always. And it makes sense if you think about it, so you can see each other's faces. That was really important part of that time. We were in circles together. And one time, I tried to convince my home group to set up the chairs in a circle. it didn't happen. They refused to. I don't know. People become kind of used to what they have. And change, I know, is hard. my whole purpose, my whole reason for my own personal recovery is to connect to a bigger picture. And I think that's true for all of us. Your recovery and your own personal recovery is truly connected to a bigger purpose. You can't really talk about recovery without talking about God, in my opinion. We call him God or higher power and whatever you label it as. But I had really closed off my heart to God a very long time ago. When I was a kid, I had no concept of God. I kind of felt like maybe there's a God, so I prayed a little bit just to make sure I didn't get in trouble. But for a long time, I closed my heart off and didn't allow God access. And then I realized that God was actually very active the entire time, my whole life, and had been. And I developed a practice of prayer and meditation and trying to open my mind and my heart to God, because that's how it works for me. And church and organized religion, that's not accessible for deaf people either. As a little girl, I would go to church and just kind of twiddle my thumbs, look at the windows, think, oh, they're pretty, you know. I couldn't hear anything, so that internalizing spirituality was something that really this room spread to me.
So I'm going to kind of wrap up here. So human diversity is a gift. So it's similar to the health of a ecosystem depends on its diversity. And so the health of AA depends on its diversity as well. We need people of color. We need LGBTQ. We need deaf. We need everyone. Diversity makes us healthy and helps us grow. Many people think that deafness is a deficit, that there's something missing, or similar to people think, well, alcoholism, you've lost something, you've lost your ability to drink. But no, you didn't lose anything. I didn't lose my hearing. I gained my deafness. You didn't lose drinking, your ability to drink. You gained AA. You're surrounded by a new culture and a new way of life. And that's what we're sharing here. That's our common thread, that we're benefiting from something that we lost, yes, but we also gained something. Typically, anything that's different is labeled as a bad thing. I have a new vision for the real world. I think we can see the world better through a lens of diversity, and that we benefit from diversity. I hope that you'll continue thinking about how you can make your home groups more rich through that lens of diversity. So really, I don't have much more to say, but it's been a really powerful journey to get here. And I think it's been a powerful journey for us all to get here. I could never have imagined that I would be here. I couldn't imagine. My 14-year-old daughter, who's here, who went to interpreting my meetings, is here with me now, interpreting for me today. And she's here today as a professional interpreter. She works as a professional interpreter. I was inviting Bonnie up. She says no. But thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Can you guys switch the mic? Is it on? Okay, we're back. All right, so Karen, thank you. That was really enlightening, at least for me. I hope it was for you. So let's, I don't know what to say. I heard Karen this morning, and I was just blown away, and I just wept, because it's beautiful. And before we close tonight, I would like us to say the responsibility statement together. And I don't know if we're going to be able to. I think the room might be a little big to stand in a circle and join hands. So just join hands with the people in your row. But let's say the responsibility statement together, loud and proud, and then close with the Serenity Prayer. Responsibility statement. I